It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. Welcome to Money for Lunch. You know, last week I was out and about traveling, and it's always good to be back home, right? It's always good to, travvel, of course. That's always nice, but it's always good to be back home. Whoever said it, I know it's a fairly famous quote, and it's very true. No matter how humble, there's no place like home. Sleeping in your bed, being around your stuff, it's kind of a nice thing. Anyway, wanted to hit you guys up with some kind of a cool things I've learned this week here on Money for Lunch, the show for prosperity or for prosperous businesses. All right. So one of the things that we learned this week is that the top two Google search words, near me, and you should add near me to your business SEO practices, maybe even on your videos, near me. I think it's I'm going to try it. I'm excited to try it. And then the other thing real quick is that you only have 70 seconds when you post something on Facebook before it's taken down. Let me rephrase it, not taken down, before the Facebook algorithm stops showing it. So if nobody interacts with your post within the first 70 seconds, it's dead meat. Excuse me. And it gets... It won't be seen by anybody. So the first thing you need to do the minute you post something is have somebody click it, like it, share it, so it stays relevant longer. Okay? Nice couple of tips there that, we learned this week. And you got to excuse me a second. I got a cough, and so I'm going to hit the... cough button. All right, let's get this party started. My first guest, Rex Connor. Rex Connor is the author of What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business? As the lead partner and owner of Mager Consortium, he applies the uniquely effective process of Dr. Robert Mager to the entire spectrum of human performance in the workplace. Connor has witnessed the common violations of common sense while working as a trusted partner inside of more than 50 companies in dozens of industry over the last three decades. Rex Connor, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. I appreciate that. And hearing that introduction, it makes me sound like I can't hold a job, but I was in those companies as a consultant, just to clarify.
Yeah, that's funny. All right. So, and just to further clarify, is it Dr. Robert Mager? How do you pronounce that last name?
Dr. Robert Mager. So the name of the company is Mager Consortium, and he's not part of my company, but he's nice enough to let us use his name.
Yeah, I think I said, what did I say, consortium? It's consortium. Okay. So, yeah, cool. Good to have you here. And you know what? What if common sense was common practice in life, right? I mean, not just business. It's just, you know, what if common sense was common in government? It's just, you know,
oh, man,
I just
love
the title
of the book. Oh, man, that's a whole different story there.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about this. You know, what was the catalyst for you to write this? I mean, you're sitting around and all of a sudden, boom, decided to write this book. Talk about this.
It's a little more subtle than that. Being in those companies as a consultant over time, this is a common experience. We all see violations of common sense all the time, and we say, why do we do that? You know, and a lot of times it's just the way things have always been done, and And the big, I guess the big impetus for me was I got into a deep study of retaining people and when I was in a corporate training position, and man, we just get that wrong. And it could be fixed so simply.
Can it though?
Well, I said, I didn't say easily. I said simply.
The process
is simple. The cause is simple. The fix is simple. It's not going to be easy, but no one's talking about it. That drove me crazy, and I did research and couldn't find anyone talking about it. So I said, I'm not a writer, but I've got to write the book. No one else is.
All right. So who is the book for? Is it for CEOs, business owners, or anybody in business?
Well, the target audience for which is written are people with some type of management or supervisory or director or above position in business. I hope anyone can benefit from it, but it's particularly written for people that have some influence on either hiring or training or retaining people, developing people.
Yeah, I like that so very much. It could, because it starts with the top down, right? I mean, if the leaders of the company, the leader of the department, the leader of the, you know, the manager of the department start utilizing it, then it'll have a chance to really have an effect.
Exactly right.
All right. So let's see. So I want to talk about this, because in the book you also cover not just common sense practices, but I understand you also cover negative energy in the workplace. Talk about this.
Well, it's all the same subject to me. We all want to enjoy our jobs. We want to contribute. We want to have a positive experience at work. So if there's misery in the workplace because of conflicts, whether it's with our boss or coworkers, that takes a human toll. And it, of course, that gets to the bottom line of the company also eventually. But, you know, the human toll is just, it's huge, and it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the way you say that. It's huge, and it doesn't have to be. All right, so let's talk about this, because, you know, when I was going to law school, and this is a lifetime ago, one of the first things I realized is that clear communication doesn't happen as frequently as we think it does. You know, and one of the issues with that is because sometimes words have different meanings, but you say something or you write something to somebody else and they interpret it differently. So how do we go, you know, how do we establish a culture of clear communication?
Well, you are right on the track of the foundational subject here, and there's a process for clarifying communication. Let me start out by saying this: we're on the attack against subjectivity wherever it is. Subjectivity meaning leaving things open to interpretation, and so you touched on one of the important ones, the communication. And it's not all communication. We don't need to be completely objective when we're asking how the family is and we're connecting with people. But when we're talking about people performing and we're saying something, I had a boss say to me once, Rex, you just aren't a team player. And obviously his interpretation and my interpretation of what it means to be a team player is very different. And so the conversation that needs to happen to get now to answering your question is, in that case, I should have said, boss, fair enough. When you observe me being a team player, what are you observing me do? And that discussion hopefully will take a little bit of time, because the boss will start listing out observations, observable performances. He'll say, well, you need to come to the team meetings on time. Fair enough. What else? Well, you need to not roll your eyes when your team members talk. Fair enough. What else? Well, you need to volunteer for assignments, you know, in the team meeting. So that way he's clarifying what in his mind is it means to be a team player in a way that people can observe it. So you're taking subjectivity out of the expectation.
Yeah, no, that I like that. I like that. Because with a statement like you're not being a team player, that doesn't help you. It's not clear. It doesn't help you. It's one of those criticisms that just makes somebody feel bad, but doesn't change the situation, doesn't empower the person to change if they wanted to.
Because in my mind, I was a great team player, and so I could have just blown that off as, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And it's just that subjectivity. When you leave something open to interpretation, everyone's going to interpret it their own way. That's the nature of humans.
Yeah, that's absolutely so, so true. And it's so, again, it's so important. And I just love this example so much because not only do you see this in the workplace, but you see this in the home as well. Parents not giving clear, actionable, criticism, strategies, fine tuning, whatever you want to call it, you gotta help people out. It's and it's just so funny because I guarantee your boss, and you, again using that example, thought he was communicating clearly when you can see that he wasn't.
Well, he was in his mind, and I interpreted it differently in my mind, and so that's the point. Subjectivity is going to lead to conflict. It doesn't matter how good the people are. The way W. Edwards Deming said it, years ago, he's a father of the quality movement. He said, "A bad system will beat a good person every time."
I love so that. It's so true.
It's so true, and it's not only in the communication; it's in the work processes. I'll talk about that next, but I want to come back to the family situation. That's my favorite example. We all know what it means because we've been a kid. Even if we haven't had kids, we've been a kid. We all know that the classic disparity is a parent saying, "Go clean your room." And we know the parent's definition and the kid's definition are completely different.
Yes. And
it's
matter
the same
of fact,
thing that happens
so funny,
in the workplace.
Yeah. And what's so funny here at Casa de Martinez, my wife will tell the kids, we have two kids left at home, go clean your rooms, and I want it my clean, not your clean.
And by now your wife has spelled out exactly what that means, so it's probably not unclear in that case.
right, absolutely. All right, so what's like the first, if you were going to help me establish a clear culture, what would be like the first thing somebody needs to do?
Boy, that's a great question. I got to do that with a company, a hospice company. They were just starting, and they said, "Rex, come in, help us build our business processes." So I said, the first thing we're going to do, and it's the first thing we did. First time I met with them, we sat down. Well, the first thing we did is have prayer. It's a hospice company. But the second thing we did is we learned that process that I just talked about for clarifying communication. I said, it has to be okay for everyone to be able to have this communication when something is fuzzy. Fuzzy is a word I use for unclear communication. When it's fuzzy, people have to be saying, okay, when you observe me doing it, what are you observing me do? And so they adopted that, and in their orientation for new hires, the first thing they covered in orientation is, here's how we have conversations about fuzzy communication, and they explain what it is and what the process was. That's the first thing. If you don't mind me jumping on to number two, the second thing is they taught in new hire orientation, they taught each person how to map out a work process, where you just draw a square. You write down the step you take, draw a square around it, write down the next step, and you map the work process. Because the second place, and this is even at least as damaging as unclear communication, if your work processes have a gap in them, that means they're open to interpretation. Or if they have fuzzy language, it means they're open to interpretation. That's what causes the conflict in the workplace.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? What's so extraordinary about the example is that, you know, they sat down, they figured it out, and that's part of the onboarding process. This is how we communicate clearly, or how this is how we have a discussion about fuzzy subjects, or however they phrased it. It's a great way to start the training process.
You know, and then that second step, everyone has to map out. They said every 6 months, you're going to map out how you do things. You're going to map out each process you follow, because you are going to find better ways to do things than we're doing them now. And we want to capture the better way. So we want you to know how to capture the processes that you're going to follow. We'll catalog them, we'll index them, but we want you every 6 months to map it out. That way, a couple things happen from that. One, you're acknowledging to them that, hey, we're open to doing things better. And you have value in this coming in fresh, you know, looking at it in a new set of eyes. But also, when that person walks out the door, their corporate knowledge doesn't walk out with them. How often are we scared about people retiring or leaving the company because they take their corporate knowledge with them? That's our fault, because we deposited the corporate knowledge into their mobile mind. Their mobile mind is going to move at some point. Why not capture it through a regular process at work?
No, I love that. I love that. That's a perfect way to overcome somebody walking out with a book of knowledge, and it's so vitally important. And I love this idea of just every 6 months, you do some kind of brain dump and you write this out. Not only will you discover better ways of processing things, but you're constantly updating the manual. You're constantly updating people. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic program. So let's talk about this. In your book, What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business, what are some of the things in the book that really stand out to you? When you were doing your research, what were some of the things? When we covered communication, now we covered about knowledge accumulation. What are some of the other things that kind of, you know, that stood out to you?
The biggest that no one's talking about, that, and it happened during the process of writing the book, I said, this is huge, and no one's talking about it. It's that, what I keep coming back to, subjectivity in the work process, especially how we're evaluated. You know, isn't it common sense that you shouldn't be surprised when you get to an evaluation at work, a performance evaluation? That's just common sense that you should know all along the way what your performance is. Everyone should know. And that's not common practice. Why do we want to surprise people every 6 months or a year and say you aren't doing your job? Why shouldn't I know the day I'm not doing it and everyone else should know?
Yeah.
Well, if our processes on what we do, how we're supposed to do it, how we're evaluated on it, if those are clearly, objectively laid out, there won't be any surprises. So this subjectivity in work processes, that was the biggest aha. And that, when you think about it, is the root to all misery in the workplace. It's the root to all evil in the workplace, is how I like to say it.
Yes, yes. The root cause of negative energy in the workplace is that subjectivity you're talking about. And it makes sense. And again, what's interesting here, it spills over into everything, right? We filter everything through our subjectivity, and we call it, and all of a sudden you have this negative energy take place at work or at home or at school or whatever. So interesting to me. But okay, so
let me be clear on the point there. I'm not talking about people being objective, because we're humans, we're going to be subjective. The work processes we establish and follow to be objective, because we're subjective.
Got you. So what you're saying is, if they give me a job description, hey Bert, here's your job description. This is what your performance review is going to be based on. It needs to be ridiculously clear.
That's right. It needs to be governed. Each task you do, because the job description should be a list of tasks that you accomplish. Each task can be governed by a performance objective. meaning there's no subjectivity into it. The objective says you do this task under these conditions to this standard. And you can do that for every task, even the soft skills. That's an important point you might want to cover. Even the soft skills, you need to be able to have an objective evaluation.
I like that. I'm taking notes. I love that. Yeah, because bottom line is, like you said, it's got to be objective. It's got to be, here's the deal. This is the objective. This is what everybody and everybody needs to be able to say, yes, I understand clearly what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what the consequences are.
It's no different. Right. I mean, look, here's a really clear, simple example. We expect you at your desk at 8 o'clock in the morning. If you're there at 8:30, everybody knows, including yourself, you've missed that first objective. You are not performing correctly if you're there at 8:30 when you're supposed to be there at 8.
Now, follow that through, Bert, that type of thinking. I'll tell you about that hospice company. The first time they lost an employee was because the contract was so clear and it said in there, the third time you don't show up for an appointment, the contract's over. In other words, you've lost your job. There's no subjectivity into it. No, oh, you're a nice person, I'll keep you on. It's the first time a CNA didn't show up for the third time, she knew that her job was over.
Yeah.
I mean, it was clear to everyone. There is no crying, no begging, no pleading. It's just, well, the contract's over. You can apply again for the job. You know, but, of course, we have this history and we have other qualified candidates that will show up. But there is no subjectivity in the process.
Yeah. And you know what? That to me, I just love that. To me, that's such a strong example. And some of these companies, I know FedEx has a similar, objective or a similar rule. You know, if you get into 3 car accidents, regardless of whose fault it is, you can't be a driver for, I think, a year or something.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it seems harsh, but that's the easiest way to do it for the majority of the people, not the minority.
Exactly. And the reason we have subjectivity is so we can make exceptions.
Right.
You know, but it's going to be an exception to the rule. You don't want the process to be subjective. You want the process to be objective. The owner of that hospice company that I mentioned, she was accountable, and she had in her contract certain things. If she did and this happened to the company, she would lose her job automatically. There's no and it had in there who her responsibilities would go to, who would fill in. But it was laid out very objectively. If this type of violation occurs for the company, regardless of the details of who did what in the company, if this occurs, your job's over. So she held herself to the same objective standard that everyone else in the company had.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. I want to talk about bringing you to my workplace or to the workplace or whatever. If somebody hired you as a consultant, what's the benefit of hiring you and bringing you on board? I mean, you were giving some examples here of the hospice. So, you know, maybe give us some other insights. What is the benefits of hiring you to come consult for a company?
Well, the first one is one of my friends, clients, but he's become a friend, but the way he explained it to his senior management, Rex wants to be a partner, and he knows that a partner's skin has to be green. The color of Rex's skin is the same color as money. He's not afraid to put skin in the game. And I went in and met with him. Of course, the first time, a lot of people consult for free the first time. But the first assessment we did to say, hey, let's do business. Well, this is our main business problem right now. This is our biggest pain. Let's do an assessment and see what we would do about it. We'll pay for half the assessment. And so I'm open to really becoming a partner. And then we are going to look at very clear foundational work processes. And it's compatible. What we do is compatible with all quality processes that companies might be using. One of the people that works with me is 30 years as a quality inspector and Baldrige inspector, and he's a Lean Six Sigma black belt. The tools we use are complementary to all those things, so no one has to throw anything out when we come in to do what we need to do. We just want to look at the work processes, take the subjectivity out of them, teach people in the company to do it, because they aren't going to call us in every time they want to do it. They need to be able to do it themselves. And so we believe in teaching people to fish and not just sell them fish all the time.
Right, right. I like that, yeah. And you know, I guess my other question to you is, what is going on with the company that they're reaching out to you? Because I'm thinking most companies aren't saying to themselves, hey, you know what, Bert, we're miscommunicating a lot, or, you know, we're having all this, we're losing a lot of valuable time in our communications, so we need to go out and find somebody to help us. I mean, that's not, is that what they're saying? I mean, what are the symptoms for a company to know that they might need help in your area?
I'll tell you, this is such a great question, Bert, and I appreciate it. The biggest one, the biggest impact we have is actually in the training arena. And Dr. Robert Mager that we've talked about, he was a big fish in the low pond of human performance in the workplace in the 70s, 80s, 90s. He's since gone on to other passions. He writes fictional novels now. But when you use his method of developing training, I can go into any company and say right off the bat, we're going to reduce your training time anywhere from 20 to 50%. They say, yeah, right. And then I say, and I'm going to guarantee that when someone comes through your training program that we've helped you develop, I will guarantee they have the skills that you laid out for them in the program. And they say, you don't hear the G word in the training realm very often, guarantee. So that's right, they're going to guarantee it. And there will be no learning curve. They will be ready to perform on day one of the job. And no one believes those three results until it happens. And it happens every time. So that's normally our lead into a company is through training. And then we say, you know, when you fix the training part of the process, you need to hire the right people with the right skills. So we work with the HR in the hiring process and build job descriptions that are clear and do job interviews that are performance-based and not talking. And then we say, okay, now you need to align the evaluation process, the way you develop people, the way you evaluate their job. But the entry point quite often is training.
Gotcha, yeah. And that makes sense to me because that's really the starting point of everything. And I like what you're saying there. So you guarantee them, one of your promises is I guarantee you on day one, after training, they're ready to do their job. There's no more training required. There's no, what do you call it, on-the-job training, OJT?
OJT, yeah. Well, their training may be OJT, but let me clarify those two because there's a mix in the G word there. The G word, the guarantee is that they will have the skill to do their job. And
right.
On day one of the job, there's no learning curve. In other words, they will have the skill on day one of their job. That doesn't mean they'll perform because I was talking to a client last week down in Texas. Someone goes through the training program. They get on the job and someone says, I know what they taught you in training. If you do it that way, you're in big trouble. We perform at this lower level. If you stand out, you're gonna be punished. So that person's not going to perform. We aren't guaranteeing the person can perform because we aren't managing the processes on the job, but we're guaranteeing that they have the skill to perform. And if they're allowed to use the skill, it will work.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, anytime someone is punished when they do something right or rewarded when they do it wrong, the skill is only one component of performing in the workplace. The consequences have to be right side up, and there have to be no obstacles in addition to the skill. But the training program, when you take the subjectivity out of it, you can guarantee training results.
Yeah. And I want you to clarify this. So give me an example of somebody being rewarded for doing wrong and being punished for doing right.
Well, the classic one is written so well in the Dilbert comics. Are you familiar with Dilbert, Scott Adams?
Sure.
Brilliant comic that, yeah, and I have 9 Dilbert comics in my book because they're such great illustrations of what we're talking about. The classic one is, well, you know this is just a rule out there. If you're a boss and you have something that has to get done, who do you give it to? You give it to your top performer that has all the other work to do because they will get it done. Who do you not give it to? You don't give it to Wally in the Dilbert comic. He makes a career out of avoiding work. You give it to Alice, the top performer, that's just buried because everyone wants her to do their stuff. So you punish the good behavior of getting things done. You reward the bad behavior of avoiding work. That's the classic example.
But so in this example here, go ahead.
No, please, please.
I'm going to say, you know, if this was, let's say, a real scenario, and I guess it really is, in a lot of situations, people don't look at it as reward and punishment. But, you know, I guess really what people need to do if they have a Wally is get rid of Wally and replace him with another Alice.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they need objective work processes so they can evaluate them objectively.
Mm.
Because, as you know, the pointy-haired boss in the Dilbert comics is all about being subjective the whole time. There's no objectivity in the work processes. But you're right. That is the secret, but the key to it is objectivity. Recruit objectively, train objectively, evaluate objectively.
Right, right. And I like what you said in the very beginning of the show. It's simple. It's not necessarily easy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because in the book you talk about common performance language. What is common performance language? How do you establish that?
There are 2 big components of it. And the first one we've talked about, Max, clarifying the fuzzy communication as it deals with performance. People performing, expectations you have, outcomes you want, have to be translated from being fuzzy. And they're fuzzy because, you know, a company mission statement is fuzzy, and it should be. It has to cover everyone in a company. You have to say things like, we provide world-class customer service. That's pretty fuzzy, but when it gets down to an individual, it needs to be translated into observable performances so I know in my job what the translation is, what the observable performances need to be so I can perform. So that's one area. And the other one is, you know, Dr. Mager made this very simple when he talked about human performance. He said there are 3 components that go into it. It's either will, skill, or hill. So if you're having a performance problem, either someone doesn't have the skill because they didn't get it in training,
right,
or they didn't bring it with them to the job, or they don't have the will, the motivation, because you're punishing them when they do it right, or you're rewarding them when they do it wrong, or they have a hill. There's an obstacle. They don't have what they need. They don't have the resources, the materials, the equipment to do what they need. And if everyone can speak in a simple performance language, then you won't have the situation that all corporate trainers dread and deal with every day, someone coming to them saying, I've got a training problem, I want you to fix it. And that happened to me once. The boss of an IT help desk came to me and said, Rex, I need training for my help desk people. I need you to train them to be nice. And we all know that's not a training issue. Well, it is, but their mama took care of it, you know, back when they were 2 or 3 years old. There's something else going on. So you need to have the same will, skill, and hill language so you can talk to each other. Business units can talk to training, can talk to recruiting to get the same results. You should be using the same language, the same processes, the same methodology when you hire people, when you train them, and when you evaluate them and develop them.
I think that I love that idea. I love this, this system that you're putting together. And again, the book is What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business? Rex, I have not gotten a copy of the book, but I think that your people, Mallory there at Smith Publicity, is going to send one out to me. As soon as I get it, I'll read it, and we'll have you back again.
I would love to be back, Bert. This has been a great conversation. I appreciate it.
You bet. Again, good stuff there from Rex Connor, consultant and best-selling author of What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business? And I just love his, you know, his take on different things, right? It gives you an example of some of the things that you could probably institute in your hiring and in your training, I should say, to help better prepare your company, right? And I love the idea of having certain goals, for lack of better terms. You know, you have these certain things that have to be objective. There is no squishy room because we as humans are subjective. So the clearer you make the duties, the clearer you make the processes, the better they are and the better they will be followed. Good stuff there. Again, if you want to follow up, it's Rex Connor. What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business? Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com. Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.